change our mindset and change our culture, about building things, guess what we have to change? The way we think things. Because the way we think things is to change the way we see things. Change the way we see things is going to change the way we do things. Change the way we do things, then we change the results that we get.
Was crack-a-lackin', everybody. Money Smart Guy Matt Cipolla here, hailing to you from Dallas, Texas, back in the saddle here on episode 7-3 on a Seven Figure Squad podcast. Joining me in studio today is my co-host, Milton Alvarez.
Oh, baby.
And we have some topics for you here this morning. We've got a Marine stuck with 20% interest on his car payment, man. Dub-a-dub, getting stuck with his car payment. So we're going to provide some insights and reactions to this too as well. Taxation is getting out of control. We want your reaction as we're going to cover this whole situation with taxation just and inflation just getting out of control for the common Joe in America today. A OnlyFans girl shows his picture to a young man and she says, "Look at my pic or pound me. Your choice." His reaction, stay tuned. Russell Brand on getting baptized. Interesting thing here about morality and why he decided to get baptized, and you got some you got some things here you want to cover too as well.
Yeah, I definitely want to cover the one city that I came from, which is Chicago, Illinois. Yeah. And definitely cover the Chicago Bears, something that you've been talking about these last couple of days when it comes down to the drafts.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at the stadium that they're actually building, and I want to be able to dive into will this construction of the stadium impact the Chicagoland area and how it will impact the residents in the area. Also, going back to my usual myth busting topics. A lot of people have this misconception that your metabolism is broken and you are able to break your metabolism and you'll stay fat forever. We're here to dive into that and make sure that you're on the right path.
There you go. I like that, man.
Yeah.
Cool. Good. All right. Yeah. Awesome. So why don't we take a look. Why don't we cover the Bears? I'm going to cover the Bears right quick because I'm a huge Justin Fields guy.
Yeah.
Too bad the guy went to the Steelers. They got rid of him. I mean, the guy had no tools to begin with. I mean, he spent his first 3 years here in Chicago with nothing around him. They deconstructed that roster just to get high draft picks. And when they finally got the high draft picks and the tools around him, they got rid of him and they reset the quarterback clock. But you know, nonetheless, you know, you got Caleb Williams, a damn unicorn of quarterback talent.
Yeah.
Roma Dunze, the wide receiver out of Washington, gets drafted here. So I'm excited about that. Sad about Justin Fields' career. But you wanted to cover the construction. Did you have a video on that, or did you want to?
We do have a video, and we can pull that article up. Jordan,
Chicago Dub Bears. Here we go.
So, yeah.
Sorry, what video?
It should be the Fox link, the Fox News link.
I thought that was an article.
That's an article, correct? And then on there, there's a couple under. Oh, so that's you. You got to pull it from there.
Oh,
yes.
It's on my end. Yes. Okay. All right. I turned into tech support today. All right. Can you see my screen, Jordan? Okay, cool. Bet. All right. If it's going to come up.
So while this is uploading, Matt, I actually have a question for you. You've been in Chicago your entire life. You just barely moved out to Dallas, Texas 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And you've seen how the economy has shifted from highs to lows. And when these kind of construction activities occur in a big city like Chicago, what kind of impact have you seen on residents who are from that specific area? So now I'm curious, because this stadium is going to cost a little bit over $3-4 billion to be able to build.
Yeah, it's not coming up. Yeah, I don't know. It's not coming up on my end. Why is this not coming up? Yeah, I don't know why.
No, that's not a problem. So
okay,
this construction is going to cost a little bit over $3-4 billion, and there's a lot of controversy from a lot of these progressive residents who say, why don't you utilize that money for other endeavors to be able to help social justice activities and to be able to push forward the agenda of helping the low-income families and also the immigration.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, being in a position that the mayor said, look, no, I stand with the billionaires and I see the vision on how this specific construction can do a lot for the city of Chicago, and I'm actually doing this for the benefit of you guys. You've been around for quite some time, and you've been around these kind of people and these kind of highs and lows of the city of Chicago. What are your thoughts or projections on, or I guess you can call it forecast, on what's going to come from this construction in the next 5-10 years?
I don't have any high opinion of this mayor, Brandon Johnson. I think he was worse than the former mayor. They called it Beetlejuice. But nonetheless, this guy here, this first thing he does when he comes into office is the first we get the money agenda. And what does he mean by first we get the money agenda? Instead of creating jobs and creating opportunities, he wants to stick it to entrepreneurs. He wants to stick it to real estate investors. He wants to stick it to the biggest companies, the most influential people in Chicago. And the guy, for example, Citadel, the most richest guy that you have in the city of Chicago with 2,000 employees, because the city doesn't feel safe, what does he do? He picks up and takes his company to Miami.
Yeah,
that's the first thing he does. So he's repelled, and he's repelled some of the biggest, most influential businesses and individuals in the city of Chicago. And now he wants to rebuild. I'm glad that there's some form of hope here that this type of project can come to Chicago. I'm very hopeful for that, specifically for the residents of Chicago. But just like Kansas City tried to do with its residents, they tried creating bonds, municipal bonds, to raise capital and cash to build that stadium. Mayor Johnson says here that's not going to be the strategy here. It's not going to affect anybody. It's going to be, it says here, in a closed stadium, I finally got the article, if we can show it. And I'm just looking at this, right?
Yeah.
The proposal is inconsistent with the progressive agenda. Okay?
Yeah.
So his progressive agenda is sticking to people, increasing taxes, sticking it to people to make sure, to entrepreneurs, that they pay more than their fair share of taxes. He doesn't think rich people pay enough taxes. That's his opinion. But he responded, "This project is aligned with my vision for the people of Chicago. I said from the very beginning that the best way to build a better, stronger, safer Chicago is when we invest in people. Yes, we have to invest in young people in particular. Now you want to stand with billionaires?
Yeah.
You don't want to stand with billionaires. You want to stick it to the billionaires.
So what do you think the shift was when he comes onto this project and his original plan coming in as mayor?
Maybe. I think he's highly corrupt. Chicago, as you know, is a very highly corrupt city. Brother, I couldn't even hang a TV in our building because it's ran by the unions. I couldn't have a guy come into my office, a buddy of mine from high school. I'm paying him $250 just to hang a TV. A building maintenance guy comes in, says, "Hey, let me see your union card." "I don't have a union card. I'm not part of the union." I said, "Bro, it's just hanging a TV on my wall." No, you got to go through the union. It's a union building. Freaking mafia, right?
Yeah.
So now I got to go through the union, $650 to hang the same damn TV, costing me, an entrepreneur, another $400 because I have to go through the union to simply hang up a TV in my office. So what do you think is going to happen to people building a building, a new construction in the city of Chicago? It's going to be the same.
It has its pros and cons, right? So now my original thought was, this stadium starts, the building process of the stadium begins, and now the residents are the ones who are being affected by it when it comes down to taxes, right?
Because
originally it was their taxes are what's going to be paying for this building. But here he breaks down that he assured that the new stadium will not result in a new tax for Chicago residents. So how does that even look like? If he's claiming the residents will not be impacted by this, and they will not be paying from their own taxes.
So lots of times here, just letting you get government agenda, it's not raising the tax, but now who's getting the money? So we can all agree also that a lot of money is going to a lot of illegal immigrants in Chicago too as well. All of our friends and family back there just screaming, complaining about what's going on in Chicago.
Yeah.
So that money is going to that direction.
Yeah.
Illegal immigration. Now money's going to build a new project. Yeah. And guess who's not getting their contribution to fund the things that they need for
the residents,
Chicago is not getting that money. So somehow, some way, it's either the city's going to raise more municipal bonds to fund and finance this. But it says here, if you could take a look at the screen again, the taxpayers, the budget's already there. The taxpayers would be on the hook for the other $2.3 billion, which includes infrastructure projects in the surrounding area. They're getting a $300 million loan from the NFL. Right there, a $300 million loan from the NFL. But it's the NFL team plans to spend $4.6 billion on building a new enclosed stadium along with an improved lakefront area, which is great. I just wish, I think the city of Chicago, for the most part, there's some purists say, man, Chicago needs to be Chicago. I think Chicago needs to take a look at what Texas is doing in terms of how they're building their cities. For example, out here in Texas, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, the suburbs are doing a great job of attracting businesses to come out to the suburbs. Spread it out. Chicago is too stacked. And guess what robs people from the lifestyle in Chicago that they otherwise could have in other cities and states? Yeah. Damn traffic. You can't tell me people are happy sitting in traffic in Chicago. When you're done with traffic, and you're going through, you're zipping through Chicago. Guess what you got to deal with?
Parking.
Bing, 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 bing.
The bridges.
Bridges. Oh no, the railroads.
Okay.
Right? They shut that. And they see you're in a rush. Rails here and there because everything's stuck. I mean, the city was, it's an old city built, you know, one of the oldest cities in America.
Yeah.
And it's built on old infrastructure. You can build new infrastructure. Why don't you kick out over there to Montgomery and Aurora, kick out to Rockford in between. You know how much land is, you know, you go out to way west out in Chicago. How about south? Build up Decatur. Those cities and suburbs need to do a better job of attracting. For example, right here in Chicago or in Dallas, Frisco. Guess who recruited residents to come out to Frisco? You had Ross Perot coming out to come to Plano. You had Jerry Jones come out to Frisco. These are cities that entrepreneurs built. And guess what happened? A lot of people, even though we had a lot of traffic here this morning, but it was nothing compared to sitting in 290.
290 or, East, 290 West.
Or 9094 coming in and out of the city. So, so if there's some infrastructure necessary in Chicago, I would say infrastructure to increase the suburbs. Get it out there because there's less unions out there in the suburban areas of Chicago.
Now, on a simple aspect, how do you think the Bears are going to do this year?
Man, I'm very excited about the Bears. Very excited about the Bears. I mean, you know, you got a top 10 defense, top 5 defense, and you've got probably the sickest wide receiver room in the entire NFL. And then you got Swift as a running back there too as well. I mean, I'm very excited. I'm very excited too about the defensive end they picked up from Kansas.
Yeah.
Apparently he just needs to get in the weight room, get his weight up. He's like 240, 250. I guess pretty light for NFL standards. I mean, you're 240, right?
Yeah.
So, and you're a linebacker, right? But you're looking for an NFL D end. Yeah. You need to be out there 260, 270. But awesome. So I'm all about the Chicago Bears. Ain't so hot about the mayor, Brandon Johnson there. Let's take a look at this young Marine. Speaking of funding and financing things, let's take a look at this young Marine who is calling his leadership, talking about, I'm paying 20% on my new car. Let's take a look at this clip.
Say that again.
20%, Sergeant.
For what year is it?
It's a 2011, Sergeant.
I'm gonna fucking murder.
It's okay, funny.
We stop right there. So here's a problem. You got a Marine. It's 2024. He bought a 13-year-old car. And for whatever reason, he's paying 20% interest on it. It's probably brand new in the Marine Corps. I can tell by the accent. He's probably not, you know, from America.
Yeah.
And his literacy in English and his literacy in finance isn't all the way there. And guess who just took advantage of it? A damn car dealership and a car financing company. And the thing when I was in the Marine Corps is our Marines had to get their finances in order. Because if you don't get your finances in order, your morale is down. If your morale is down, you can't do your job because you're focused on other things. So for everybody out there who's looking at a car payment, here's my couple suggestions. Especially right now with the car payments for most people, it's the second largest purchase in most people's budget. And here's my rule. And by the way, we've got a lot of these comments on our video of what we've talked about in the past is one of the most watched videos we've had in the past is our opinions on car payment.
Yeah.
And number one, I'd say never buy brand new. Don't buy brand new. Don't buy brand new. If it's your first car, second car, don't buy brand new. And they're going to sell you on this. They're going to sell you, well, you don't have to worry about maintenance. You're not going to have to worry about this. You don't have to worry about this being a clunker. Listen, we've seen a lot of cars, 50,000, 100,000, 150,000 miles. We've got a lot of people providing social proof that a lot of these cars, 50,000, 100,000, 150,000 miles are still good. And so what? You have to do a couple bits of maintenance. Maybe at worst, a transmission goes out or an engine goes out. That's $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. But you talk about a brand new car, let's say at $45,000, but you're buying a used car at $15,000, $20,000, or even $10,000 to $15,000, right? $2,000 to $3,000 for a transmission, $4,000 to $5,000 for transmission is a lot less than the $15,000 to $20,000 you are not buying at cash, but financing, because you know, when you're looking at interest, you're not working for that interest is not working for you. The interest is working for somebody else. Number two, 10% to 15% of your car budget. Your monthly budget should go to a car payment. So if you can't, my rule with cars is if you can't buy it two times or three times, don't get it at all. Sometimes you look at cars, and real talk, when you look at cars, what do you think about when you're buying a car? From a guy's point of view, we're looking at a car, what are we thinking about?
The look, right?
How are we looking at this car?
Yeah.
And how does the salesman sell us? Cranks on the stereo? Oh, dog.
Hits the gas.
Man, your friends, man, they're gonna see you in this car, and were they gonna think about you? You pick up your girl in this car, was she gonna think about you? They're selling you the, you know?
One of my friends, he used to be a car salesman. He's like, bro, you know, one of the things that we would do is when women would come into the buy of the car, we would never offer them a ride. Because, you know, back maybe like 10, 15 years ago, maybe till this day, I haven't bought a car in a long time.
Like a test ride.
A test ride, exactly. Yeah. But for men, for every single man, they always take them off on the road for a good 5-10 minutes so they can get the feel for behind the car. But they never do that to women.
Interesting. How women buy cars differently. Yeah, I mean, Shreena, shade up. She, I don't think the last 4 or 5 cars she has ever tested. That's 100% true. Yeah. She goes, babe, I just want this in this color.
Yeah.
And then I bring it to her. She goes, babe, that's what I wanted.
The cosmetic, the look.
Mm-mm, yeah. For her, it was the budget.
For us, it's the drive.
For us, it's the drive.
Yeah.
It's the pull, how we look. So think about that, gents. Ladies, think about that too as well. You know, think about how we buy our cars. It's interesting how... Yeah, both male and female have a different way of purchasing big items in their life. Third one is focus. I'd rather you focus, take that income, focus that cash flow that you are using to potentially pay a higher car note. Use that into securing yourself into a side hustle, a business, to secure your income. There's a stat out there that 46% of all small businesses today can't afford to pay their bills. What does that mean? That is a sign of a recession. So if you have a comfortable job right now, guess what? You might be laid off of a job. And if you are... also securing income, and let's say, for example, you can't pay the car note or you can't pay your credit card bills. Guess what happens to your credit? It shoots up. And when your credit shoots up, your credit score shoots, your payment shoots up, your credit score goes down. Guess what happens to your interest rate for other loans that you might apply for? That shoots up too as well. So less money in interest you have working for other people and more interest you have working for yourself, the better you are off in your finances. Because two things there. If you secure your income, you get laid off. Guess what? You fall back on your side hustle. You fall back on your savings to get you through the tough times until you find new employment. Or you make your side hustle your full-time hustle, and you don't compromise your credit. Everything protect your credit. I say three things. What's ace? Ace over everything, ace over the king, is control and ability of securing your income. King is your credit. Queen is cash and capital in the bank for opportunities. So... You had a thought on that too as well?
Yeah, someone actually asked a question, and they said, all right, the other question was answered. Amazing. Thanks for the answering.
Okay.
But for business owners, Matt, what would you consider the hack to convert your vehicle into a business expense?
Yeah. The hack is you assign your car into service in your business. So every time you drive, so you take a side ledger, and there's apps allow you to do this too as well. For every time that you drive in your car for business purposes, so business miles in 2024, all right, deduction. So for every mile that you drive, love this, for every beginning January 1st, 2024, for every mile that you drive for business, go from client to client, right, it's 67 cents per mile. Client to convention, 67 cents per mile. So if you drive 10,000 business miles in your car because you put your car in service, that's $6,700 that you can potentially write off in your taxes. So beforehand, if you didn't have a side hustle, you can't do this. But if you do have a side hustle, you have a side business, and you put that car, your personal vehicle, in service into your business, and in this example, you're driving 10,000 business miles, that's $6,700 of tax deductions you potentially can use to offset the income that you're making from your business into your tax. So this is how you can make your book, excuse me, that's how you make your car a tax-deductible goldmine. A book I would recommend for you guys to read is Save Taxes Big Time by Sandy Botkin, an attorney and former IRS agent and trainer for IRS agents too as well.
That's sick, man. That's something that I personally didn't start applying until maybe 3 years into what I was doing, man. Literally 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, 2 years ago was the first time that I actually sat down with CPA. I'm like, all right, how do you do this? And he actually recommended the same exact book. Like, look into this book, man. You'll love it.
And the other part too, as well, that I even talk about is if you're financing it, you can use Section 179 depreciation. So in other words, if you're not in business for yourself, you can't write off the depreciation.
Yeah.
But if you have a side hustle, your side hustle doesn't have to be full time.
Yeah.
Well, if you put that into service to your business, you can actually write off the depreciation. If it's over 6,000 pounds. Large part of the depreciation in the first year. Before, you can't do that. So, big video that I've had in my YouTube channel is how I pay $25 a month for my Rolls Royce because I'm using these strategies for using my car, my personal vehicle, now transferring into business vehicle, business use for that vehicle for business use. And legally and ethically, I can do that per Now, obviously, I'm not giving you tax advice. Make sure you check with your CPA, your tax professional, to properly do this for your situation. All right. Speaking of taxation, this is the best reaction we've heard on the best diatribe I've ever heard on taxation. Let's take a look at what this guy has to say about taxes.
How did we go from fighting a revolution over a 2% tax on a breakfast beverage to what we pay today? And we're taxed on money when we receive it, when we spend it, when we keep it, when we invest it, and even when we die with it. It gets worse. We commute to work to make that money in a car that is taxed again to register on roads we're already taxed to build, fueled by gas that is taxed even further, and many times through tolls that tax you again. And that's to maintain bridges and highways and tunnels that already have billions of dollars, taxpayer dollars, allocated to them, and they're still falling apart.
Yep.
And then when you get to your office that is taxed to exist in a corporation that is also taxed to do business that almost certainly requires permits and other things, which are another tax, you are paid a paycheck that the corporation much match another payroll tax on top of what they have to pay you.
Yep.
Then you go to a home of which you are taxed to own every single year that we bought with money that the government already taxed us on. Oh, by the way, the more money you make and the more you pay in taxes warrants the government taking more and even higher percentages of your money. Now, if you're angry, hold that thought. Our federal tax code is 2,600 pages, 400 pages longer than the unabridged version of the Webster Dictionary. But if you read that tax law cover to cover and you did your taxes solely based on that, you'd probably go to jail. Why? Because that does not include the over 9,000 pages of additional IRS regulations that were never passed into law, but rather written by some bureaucrat sitting in his office that we still have to abide by. Congress never passed that.
Yeah, you know, and here's an argument, man. It's like, he was talking about the Boston Tea Party, right? It was the whole thing, no taxation without representation. And so you're looking at taxes, and this is why I believe an entrepreneur really needs to run the finances of our government.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, the secretaries of treasury, the treasury secretaries, usually the people that are running the budgets of our government have zero financial training, zero financial experience. The former comptroller of the United States of America said that. By the way, forget the business. He said forget the country side of things, because Americans today aren't up to speed on financial literacy with their retirement. The Social Security system, the traditional retirement planning system, is all broken, and people, if they don't see the brokenness in it, they'll end up stuck with leaning on government, churches, and charity for the rest of their life. If you don't learn how to do this all by themselves. Yeah, so it's a scary thing. And on top of that, if the government here is spending, and we don't agree with how they're spending, just like we talked about the Chicago Bears and how they're allocating money, so who holds them accountable? Who calls them out on it? I remember in the military, brother, we'd order hammers, and we'd go with supply, we order things, blah, 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 right? And now you go down to the supply warehouse, and they go to the contractors. They order through the contractor, the suppliers, of hammers and toilet seats and cleaning materials. And I remember seeing a hammer, they're selling it to the government for $50. I'm like, the hammer's $50? Bro, I can go down to Home Depot, find a better quality hammer and get it for $15.
Yeah.
$50 versus 15? So what are the government contractors doing? They're taking advantage of the government because they know nobody's looking over it.
No one's regulating it.
Yeah, they're just, hey, let me set a bid to do business with the government as a business. And if I win the bid, I'm going to charge X amount of dollars, and I'm going to overcharge the federal government because they've got these unlimited resources, and I, as an entrepreneur in the outskirts, and can take advantage of the system, but nobody holds both the entrepreneur and the business owner accountable for overcharging the government, or the government saying, yeah, that's a little bit too expensive, and you need to lower down that bid, lower down that cost. But that's what goes on between government and businesses.
And you say that's due to the lack of experience and knowledge that these people who are running the government finances are doing.
Sure.
Which is why you're thinking, you're pushing that the idea of an entrepreneur, someone who has an entrepreneurial background, should be the one controlling, maneuvering, running, and giving it, you know, consulting in that realm.
Not an entrepreneur, somebody that understands finances, that's because here's a problem too with the government. Some of the most brilliant people that end up working for the government, degrees and certifications and experience, yeah, and they see the fraud, they see the corruption, they see the crime. Guess what happens to them eventually over time? They get lured by the private sector.
Yeah.
Because it pays more. And if, you know, for example, the guy I was talking about, the guy Sandy Bakken, you know, save your taxes big time. He was working for the IRS, got a lot of experience working for the IRS. Eventually what happens to him? He ends up starts creating his own business. TRI, Tax Research Institute.
Yeah.
So it's hard for even the government to retain its best citizens because it's not lucrative to stay on the government salary. It's more lucrative for them to get a private sector. So you lose your, you end up losing your best talent. And the sad part about it too as well, if you're going to recruit and maintain, if you want to recruit and maintain your best talent, what do you got? Eventually, you got to pay them
a hell of a lot more.
A lot more money.
Yeah, a lot more
so
money.
You have to compete with the private sector to retain your best people. So what is that? Who pays for that person's salary, though?
Yeah.
American taxpayers.
Correct.
And the largest employer of people in America today is guess who? The largest employer in America is who?
Who?
The federal government.
The government.
By the way, that's bad.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing. It's a bad thing. That means government's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and more corrupt and more corrupt, more corrupt. Book recommendation for everybody to read, or if you want to watch a five-part DVD series, is Atlas Shrugged. It's a great story by Ayn Rand, a economic philosopher who came from socialist Russia when her family had a business, and then, you know, USSR took over. They took over her father's business and escaped America because of socialism. And they come to America, and guess what she starts seeing here over her lifetime? Socialist type practices in our government starting to happen, and it destroyed where she came from, her homeland. And when you see these type of things happening in America, it's a scary thing. And this is area of taxation is a big thing when it keeps growing and growing and growing. And look what just happened yesterday in Canada. Trudeau says anybody that's making $250,000 or more, you're on capital gains tax. In other words, you buy something low, you sell it high. Like you buy stock low, you sell it high. You buy a house low, you sell it high. That's called capital gains. Mm. If you're making over $250,000 in Canada, 66% of that capital gain is now taxed by the government in terms of capital gain. So you make that money, you get to keep 33%. So what is it doing? Is it incentivizing people to invest or disincentivizing people to invest?
Yeah, else stay or leave the country.
So if you're not incentivized to invest, guess what? You're not going to happen in your society. Investors, yeah. You're going to lose your investors, and you're going to lose money from around the place. So, all right, this young lady, I guess she's an OnlyFans girl. All right.
Find out.
And so she says with her phone to this young man, seducing him to some questionable activities. Let's take a look at this clip.
See the rest of this photo or pound me?
Neither.
Neither? You got a girlfriend?
No, I don't.
You're just not interested in me?
No, I believe that if you repent and believe in Jesus Christ, that you shall be saved.
Okay. So. Do you not like girls that do OnlyFans then?
No, I don't, to be straight up, but I feel
that's
like
okay.
There's better ways. It's a good source of money, but I feel like it's a way that Satan's getting into your heart to manipulate women through money.
Okay.
And it's sad. You guys aren't the culprit. To me, it hurts me because younger kids and the young population are really getting persuaded into something that they shouldn't be. And that's the part that really makes me feel bad. But
yeah, I understand. I appreciate that perspective.
I'm not going to bash you because everybody is a sinner and everybody does a lot of things wrong.
Yeah.
I just like to say the truth, and I believe that's the truth.
Yeah, no, I love that.
God bless you guys.
And yeah, I hope you as well.
Jesus may find you one day.
Thank you. Appreciate it, man.
Good for him.
He's a young guy too, man.
Good for him.
Early 20s.
I mean, to give that temptation a young man for sex and, you know, take advantage of this young lady. So there's two parts, right? So the young man, let's break down him first. Very mature.
Yeah.
On his end. You know, armed with the sword of the spirit.
Yeah.
The shield of faith.
Spares it their job.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But what 20-year-old would do that? Not a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, he was on spot, maybe on camera, maybe.
Yeah.
But think about his aspect, you know, and for him to stay firm, to stand firm on Christ, to stand firm in his faith.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, I probably wouldn't have done that. I think. At the age of 19, 20, I was still looking for validation, and I was just
you and me both, bro. I would have been right there with you, man.
Yeah.
And it's so rampant today because when I was coming up, at 19, 20, 21 years old, the only way we got porn was you go to the corner store and you see the Playboy magazines behind the cashier wrapped in plastic.
Yeah, no, mine was Hollywood Video or Blockbuster, and you have to go behind the curtains.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it.
We had the DVDs or the VHSs.
And then today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to watch my five-year-old on YouTube, whatever he punches in or whatever he punches on the internet or whatever you know, my nanny will search for, because these freaking creepers out there will try to find ways to have you stumble across the damn porn site. And so it's very easy for people to stumble across porn. Number two, let's look at it from the woman's perspective. Man, I feel sorry for her, man, that this young lady has to feel that she's going to earn income from, of course, being sensationalizing sex, looking at ways to what's the word I'm looking for? She's just looking to use her body, what it is today, and as a way to earn income. And that being said, short game, she'll make a lot of money. But let's say, for example, she realizes at 25 years old, 30 years old, okay, this is getting old. I don't want this no more. And then she stumbled across a guy, some dude. And guess what most dudes will do out of curiosity? He will Google her.
Yeah.
And he finds a bunch of stuff about her. He's never going to call her back again.
100%.
Well, I mean, what dude is going to want to, I don't know. I might be wrong. Because I was in Marine Corps too as well. Yeah. We had Marines marrying strippers.
But isn't that like a stigma? Like a lot of military people, they try to find wives within the first couple of months so they can have like emotional support for them while they're off overseas.
Emotional support and additional income.
Additional income.
Because the Marines, the thing about this, the military will pay you more money for being married. So it actually incentivizes you to be married. But then the unit's job is to make sure, is this a real marriage or is this one of those ways to, you know, to try to get the Marine Corps to pay that Marine or the service member more cash?
Yeah. Back in Chicago, I actually, I've known a couple of people who are in the industry because back before I started, I was doing personal training. I was doing a lot of off-duty security. I was doing bouncing, things of that nature.
Yeah.
So I was around the industry a lot of all kinds, whether it's bottle service women or just, you know, strippers or whatnot. So I was just there on the at the door making sure people didn't walk in with guns and stuff. So with that, it's unfortunate. A lot of these women, whether it's OnlyFans or whether it's an actual strip club, a lot of them drug themselves up before they even get on camera.
So they didn't want to do it.
Because they don't want to do it. And the thing, there's two avenues that this can go. Because I've actually re-met a lot of the women that I knew back then.
And now they're, now they're in their 30s?
Yeah, and they're like, dude, I hate this. But now I don't have any skills. I can't hold on a job anywhere that I go. My expenses don't match what I make at work, so now I feel forced to revert back into it or sell drugs or just something to make quick cash, because they were used to $10,000-$15,000 a month in just stripping or bottle service or not OnlyFans, and so now their expenses are up there
and their lifestyle's up there.
And now when they feel like, all right, they had a come to Jesus moment, or they just realize like, yo, this is not it.
Yeah.
Now they have to revert back on their expense, but they can't because they already have bills up to that point. So now they look for a job making 15, 20 bucks an hour with absolutely no skills. It's hard to hold that down. So you immediately revert back into the same hamster wheel.
Yeah.
And now with men, you're right. I mean, I don't remember being 20 years old Googling a girl, but I think nowadays it makes sense. If you're in your 20s, Googling somebody might make a little bit more sense because they might have an OnlyFans page that you don't know about it.
Or social media. Trying to look at my social media.
So nowadays it makes sense. Maybe 15, 20 years ago, that didn't make that much sense for me. But now, like, either A, they can Google them and then you can decide whether you want to affiliate or not. But then there's also men out there who are also in that world who sell drugs, who slang, who pimp women out.
Mm-hmm.
I know someone from Chicago. I can't say name, but I can name businesses. Who they utilize their business? It's a titty bar.
Yeah. Okay.
In Berwyn, in Skokie, in that area where I know the owner, and they utilize that place. Whatever they utilize that place to launder. Mm-hmm. They utilize that place to bring women from different countries.
Yeah. Oh, sad.
From different countries.
And trafficking.
Yeah. And traffic women through that. One of the biggest countries is Cuba. They send people to Cuba. Or they ask the girls who came from Cuba or from those countries, say, hey, do you know anyone else who wants to make money? And our guarantee is, if you stick with us for the next X amount of time, we will loan your family $50,000 American dollars.
So that's how they recruit them.
So that way your family can have a good lifestyle. You come to the United States with us, you travel the nation with us, and we extort you, or you come to this specific place and you dance, you do all this, horrible, and then once you pay back your debt, we bring your family back, we bring your family into the United States, and we get you guys fixed with papers.
Mm.
So it's a cycle. Some people do it out of necessity, some people just do it because they're lazy as shit. Mm. But regardless, you know, what do you think from a man's perspective? Do you think it's an identity thing? Do you think it's a childhood thing? Do you think it's the way they were raised with their father, the relationship they have with their father?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, again, boils down to literacy. Forget financial literacy. Just think about a world without literacy. You don't know how to read. You don't know how to write.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know how to read and write, you're always dependent upon somebody else.
Yeah.
Depending on somebody else to take you somewhere. You depend on somebody else to read the rules, the signs on the road, to read your text message, the email for you. Right, to fill out a job application. Let's say you get a job, but you still don't know how to read and write. You don't know how to do your job. It's all based on literacy. What if you magnify that to financial literacy, we're being robbed of that. And that's why this whole notion of being dependent upon other people, being dependent upon the government, if you don't know how to self-sustain yourself and understand the basic tenets of literacy, both basic literacy and financial literacy, you're always going to be dependent on somebody else exploiting you, exposing you, taking advantage of you because you don't know how to create your own bread. And we've seen kids now make money with their own with their own YouTube channels. We made kids with their own engine. We got kids, but what happened to the old school lemonade stand?
Yeah,
you're providing a service to thirsty people. You know, you see a construction site, post up. You know, simple things like that. I mean, teaching the kids during the wintertime, hey, once you shovel your neighbor's driveways and sidewalks during the springtime and summertime, teach your kids, hey, here's a lawnmower, build a route. Those type of things. Even when I was coming up, collecting aluminum cans and newspapers and recycling them at the junkyard. And that was my side money, so I could buy records because I wanted to be a DJ.
Yeah.
So you know, have to be resourceful, and knowing how you can create something from nothing, if you are literate about how things can work. There's a demand out there. There's a need out there, but you can provide a supply and a product and a service that helps other people's lives become better, and you fill in that gap. That's the basic understandings and tenets of entrepreneurship. And speaking of which, starting to change around a lot of people's lives, Russell Brand this past Sunday got baptized. Russell Brand, the guy that the Englishman that we see in movies, got baptized. Let's take a look at this clip.
Russell Brand is getting baptized? Wow, check this out.
I'm getting baptized this Sunday. I'm taking the plunge. I'm getting baptized.
Wow.
What's been explained to me is it's an opportunity to die and be reborn. An opportunity to leave the past behind and be reborn in Christ's name, like it says in Galatians. I know a lot of people are sort of cynical about the increasing interest in Christianity and the return to God, but to me it's obvious. As meaning deteriorates in the modern world, as our value systems and institutions crumble, all of us become increasingly aware that there is this eerily familiar awakening and beckoning figure that we've all known all of our lives within us and around us. And for me, it's very exciting.
If you know God can transform anyone, then follow now.
That's it. I mean, amen, praise God. Another soul won. You know, Matthew 4:4 says that man does not eat by bread alone. Rather, he lives on every word that comes from the mouth of the Eternal One. You know, it's one thing to be fed physically, but it's another thing to be fed spiritually.
Do you remember the very moment that you decided to give your life to Christ?
Yeah, I do, 100%.
And did you see any drastic changes from the one day to the next?
You know, in terms of drastic changes, no. But the euphoria of this new relationship, you know, this whole euphoria. I'm like, oh, I have a new relationship with Christ, blah, 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 blah. It isn't until about, 1 month later, 2 months later, 3 months later, that reality sits in. Yo, bro, this is a disciplined life.
Yeah.
If I'm going to take on Christ, like Russell Brand, you take on Christ, awesome. Now you got to live a disciplined life. And hopefully it's not just for clicks or likes or views or make you continue to be relevant in media. But if you really want to live a life of Christ, being Christ-centered and heaven-focused and kingdom-focused, it is a disciplined life. And so the excitement is in the beginning. But now, okay, it takes work to be a believer.
Have you ever had a moment of rededication to Christ where you feel like, all right, I've been too focused on one endeavor, like these last 10, 15 years of my life, I feel like I need to rededicate my life to Christ and nurture the relationship that I have?
Oh, all the time. All the time. I mean, that we have to go, we always are being pulled in our commitments. So just staying centered and focused, that's what having an effective prayer life is all about. So it's not like you have to get rebaptized, but
right.
Just staying center focused and having the right people around you, the right influences around you. But you know, I wanted to take a quick. I did a little study, but why? Because we don't want to look at Christianity or being baptized as kind of like this cool trend.
Yeah.
But really to help understand why there's such a moral decay in our country today, and we just talk about
sure.
this, you know, and we all know about it. So, did a deep dive. I asked myself this question. When did the decline of morality begin? Well, in 1962, landmark ruling of Engel versus Vital, that school-sponsored prayer, even non-sectarian prayer, violated the Establishment Clause. Since then, Supreme Court has pushed forward from banning Bible reading for religious and moral instruction in 1963 to prohibiting school-sponsored prayers at high school football games in 2000. So the school by itself can't say, okay, let's all bomb prayer. It's the coaches on the field that say, hey, guys, want to get together and pray in the middle of the field? We can.
Yeah.
But the school can't do it, right? Mm. Since 1962, they started removing prayer and Bible from the school. The other aspect, too, as well, is I was curious, what happened to the murder rate? Did it stay the same? Because you remove this area of morality, you remove the Bible,
yeah,
you know, from an institution of learning. Well, I also discovered the murder rate in the United States rose sharply from 5 per 100,000 residents in the 1960s to eventually hover on 9 murders per 100,000 people in the 1970s. Mm. And also, violent crime nearly quadrupled between 1960 and its peak in 1991. Property crime more than doubled over the same period. Now, I'm not saying just because you remove prayer and Bible from the schools is the reason why murder and crime has skyrocketed, but the facts are pretty telling.
Yeah, I mean, there's no morality, there's no values, there's no principles, there's no conviction of like, yo, this is wrong. There's absolutely no guide besides your spirit. Because I believe the more time you spend trying to get to know this omnipresence or God or whatever mm-hmm. it is you want to call God, right? Because at the end of the day, God is a three-letter word that we gave this omnipresence so we can describe something greater than us. If you don't nurture that relationship that you have with your creator, you being the one who was created from the creator, and you become the mini source from the actual source that we all have, I feel that the less and less time that you spend with that creator, the less and less conviction you have.
Yeah.
So yeah, sure. Like as you said, like, you know, maybe it wasn't the prayer, maybe it wasn't the Bible within the schools, but then when you do start removing those things out of the schools and out of the systems and out of like the jobs and businesses, a lot more people start free thinking. Mm-hmm. And when you start free thinking, a lot of people don't have emotional intelligence. And when mm-hmm. they don't have emotional intelligence, they tend to act out of emotion. Yeah. And when you're angry, you're pissed off, of course you're going to retaliate and you're going to act out of spite and you're going to get upset and you're going to hit and you're going to be violent. You're going to be spiteful with your words and you're going to be revengeful and revenge. We're going to do all these negative things. But there's, you know, I do believe there's people out there who don't have the capacity to live a life unless... live a prosperous, successful life and a joyous life without having a list of, you know, rules or disciplines that they need to follow.
Yeah, for example, like the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Do not bear false witness on your neighbor. Is that a bad thing not to follow? Yeah. It's a good thing to follow.
Yeah, of course.
Do not murder. Is that a good thing to follow? Do not steal. Is that a good thing? Honor your mother and father. Is that a good thing to follow?
Yeah.
I mean, replace it with what? Do me?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, we're all flawed, bro. You know this.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a trainer. You don't have to be even religious or even faith-focused. You know already as a trainer that people sometimes don't do what they need to do, even though they need to do it.
Yeah.
Simple as that. For 100%. The betterment of their life, they still don't do it.
Yeah, 100%. They're flawed. And, like, for example, like you automatically treat your mom, treat your parents well, obviously. Don't rob, don't steal, obviously. Don't kill. That's a moral compass that we have. And I feel, again, that moral compass, I believe, is a lot more conditioned the more time we spend with our creator, the more we're rooted in a truth and a reality that we actually should be living through. Amen. But now there's some people who are, unfortunately, they don't have the IQ and the EQ to really understand that. And when you don't have that, a list of rules are needed in order for you to be like, okay, don't kill. Okay, that makes sense when it's kill. Yeah. Versus just respectfully saying it like just raw dogging life and just approaching it however the hell you want. Exactly. It's such a freaking reality, man.
Exactly. Man, so congratulate Russell Brand. We continue to pray for you. Heaven rejoices if this is something you've decided to do. And we pray for the strengthening of your faith. Let's continue with, you got some myth-busting Wednesdays?
Myth-busting Wednesday.
Okay.
Last week it was, do you actually need 6 meals to boost your metabolism? And do you need 6 meals in order for you to reach your goals? And that myth, that fact was completely busted. And this week, someone asked me, Milton, is my metabolism broken? And if it is broken, please, 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 please tell me that I'm not going to be fat forever. So I pulled up a video of a guy actually talking about how to fix your quote-unquote broken metabolism, and we'll speak on those facts now.
All right.
Here's how you know if you have a slow metabolism. This is an easy test. After you eat a meal, do you feel tired? If you feel tired after eating a meal, that means you're overwhelming your metabolism, overwhelming your digestive system, and there's some things for you to do.
Especially
one of the easiest
lunch.
Tips I can give you is to practice intermittent fasting, which gives your digestive system and metabolism a break. Second tip is to focus on protein and fat, decrease your carbs. You do these two things, and you could fix your metabolism within a few days.
That is a fucking myth. Sorry, 5 minutes. Sorry for cursing, but that is a fucking myth. There is no such thing as a broken metabolism. You cannot break your metabolism. There's no way of fixing your metabolism because your metabolism is not broken. The only thing that your metabolism is doing its job and is adapting to the lifestyle, to the way you eat, really? And to the way you sleep, and to the way you supplement. Our metabolisms adapt to what we do. They do not break. Now, for example, let's just say, I don't know, You're used to consuming 2,000 calories a day. That's just that's been your foundation. That's been your bottom line the entire time. So, and you work out, I don't know, three times a week. Each workout, you're burning around 500 calories per workout. Naturally, your BMR is going to be in a position based off of...
What's BMR?
Your basal metabolic rate. That's how many calories your body naturally burns at a standstill, just hanging out.
Okay.
Right? You're functioning, you're breathing, you're blinking, your heart's pumping. That's burning calories. Me speaking right now is burning calories. So everything that you do that involves movement or existing burns calories.
Okay.
So if you're used to consuming 2,000 calories a day, you're working out three times a week, and also non-exercise activities called NEAT. If you have the same lifestyle and the same routine, you're going to be burning, your BMR is going to be at a level that meets everything that you're doing up to this point. But now, all of a sudden, you decide to go on an extreme fad, F-A-D, fad diet, and you decide to drop your calories all the way down to 800 calories because you have a trip coming up, because you want to fit in a suit, you want to fit in a dress, whatever the case may be. So now for the next 4 or 5 weeks, maybe even longer, you decide to only eat 800 calories a day, and you're still working out 3 to 4 times a week, burning around 500 calories per workout session. What's going to end up happening is that you're not providing your body the calories that it needs to be functional. Now, what does functional mean? That means being able to utilize your brain to think, being able to utilize your eyes, being able to utilize your voice, being able to move around, be able to move any part of your body and just to exist. If you're not providing enough calories for your body just to function, your body is going to start reducing the amount of calories you're able to burn. Your body's going to start reserving those calories. So now, if let's just say naturally, whenever you would work out, you burn 500-600 calories. Now, after being on an 800 calorie diet for about 4 or 5 weeks, those 500 calories that you would normally burn from the same activity, now those calories start reducing to maybe about half, or you'll start noticing that you're not burning as much because your body's trying to reserve energy, because your body's saying, oh crap, this man, this woman, or this, you know, whatever, is not eating enough calories so that we can utilize, so we need to preserve energy so that way he or she can function. So now you've made your metabolism adapt to the new lifestyle and to the new trend of eating that you have. What's a way to quote unquote fix, which is not fixing, it's just helping your body adapt. What's another way to help your body fix your metabolism is reverse dieting, to where you slowly start increasing your calories so that way you can start consuming more food with still being able to exert the same amount of energy you exert during the gym. Now, where does your metabolism usually adapt? There's three areas of your life that your metabolism adapts the most. It's when you hit weight loss plateaus. The reason also your metabolism breaks, quote unquote breaks, aka adaption, is misunderstanding the normal metabolic slowdown. As you age, your metabolism slows down. That's a normal thing. You exert less energy, you don't move as much, especially when you're at a standstill and the way you move your body, because you're getting older, you have more responsibilities, it's going to slow down. It's also an effect of yo-yo dieting. When one, you know, for about 6-7 weeks, you're eating whatever the hell you want, and then you drop back down to about 1,800 calories, 1,700 calories. So now you're at an all-time low. Then you rise back up, and then you come back down. The yo-yo dieting is going to force that as well. And one of the other reasons why a lot of people, quote-unquote, go on these metabolic approaches in their diet is from the lack of visible results. A lot of people jump into these diets because they don't see the results, so automatically they think that their metabolism is broken. When in reality, you've probably just been eating very, really shitty foods, been having really horrible sleep, and not having the right routine. So my advice to you is connect with a dietitian, connect with a nutritionist or someone who's certified in nutrition, and truly educate yourself on what your metabolism is and how it can actually work with you and for you to give you the energy that you need. Depriving yourself of food is not going to help you lose weight. It's actually going to reduce your brain function, going to reduce your function as a body, and it's going to make you less productive, more on edge, and it's going to actually affect you in a negative way.
Chips Ahoy cookies, Chips baby. Ahoy. Chips Ahoy cookies, man. Chocolate cupcakes, red velvet. Just dancing in my...
just in my head right now. But for real, though, I mean, there is time and place for that. Just not always consumed.
Correct.
You know, but, you know. So if by the way, I'm starting a fast. So what am I starting? What do you got me going on starting May 1st?
Today.
Today.
Have you eaten?
I haven't eaten yet.
Yeah. So, for example, Matt, he has a trip coming up in, what, 6-8 weeks?
In July.
In July.
We're going to Bora Bora.
So, in 7 to 8 weeks. Eight to 9 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. So, for Matt, or for anyone along the lines of like, hey, I have a trip coming up. I need to fit in a dress. I need to fit in a suit. Okay. Not a problem. Short, when you reduce your calories, you can do it for a short period of time in order for you to meet certain goals. But one of the best suggestions that I have for a lot of people watching is consider going on a carb cycle where you're cycling your carbs during the week, where you have your high days, your medium days, and your low days, which will also help you reduce the adipose tissue, reduce the fat cells in your body. Not get rid of fat, but reduce the fat cells in your body. And also maintain your energy levels at an all-time high and still be able to work out without being deprived of energy. So for Matt, his main focus is the following. His main focus would be fibers, greens, vegetables, lean protein as secondary. The third would be fats, and carbohydrates would be at the bottom as far as priority.
So no rice, no Filipinos. You love rice.
Your main meals that you'll be consuming carbohydrates will be as a pre-workout meal and a post-workout meal. That'll be your main focus.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. And you'll be going from working out 3 days a week and just doing strength training to showing up either 20 minutes earlier or staying 20 minutes later and doing the Stairmaster or the treadmill at an incline for at least 15, 20 minutes.
Damn that Stairmaster.
You gotta love it, brother.
Right. Awesome, man. Well, listen, yeah. we got Kayvon Frazier, a former Dallas Cowboys safety. We have a conversation about the NFL draft, life after professional sports, become an entrepreneur. We're talking about faith, our finances. We're talking about that with Kayvon Frazier tomorrow here at 12 o'clock Central Standard Time. Be heading out to the Kentucky Derby this weekend. So we're going to have a very exciting time with Patrick and David and some of our friends in business. And who knows, I might just do a pop podcast right there live from the Kentucky Derby studio. Suite.
Suite.
And we'll have some interesting guests and friends that may have their opinions about finances and faith. So make sure you stay tuned to the Seven Figure Squad YouTube channel. Nonetheless, we'll be back here next Wednesday for another episode here where faith and finance and entrepreneurship meet. That being said, guys, appreciate you guys tuning in. Please subscribe. And if you've watched this podcast towards the end, put gotcha, and I'll send you a book from my studio to your address by putting the word gotcha in the comment section below. That being said, appreciate it. On behalf of Milton Alvarez, I'm your Mighty Smart Guy. And until we meet again, continue to live smart, continue to love smart, and be mighty smart today. See you next week. Bye-bye.